Today, Tree Health with Michael Talbot, certified arborist and horticulturist. He's also a conservation consultant and landscape designer with Talbot Ecological Land Care. Welcome back to the program, Michael.
Thank you, Mindy. It's great to be here.
And of course, we're going to talk about tree health today. And I guess before we get into some specifics about that, maybe you can talk a little bit about why trees are so critical.
Well, I think it's obvious to a lot of people who enjoy the beauty of trees, why they enjoy them. But they are a very critical part of the ecology of almost the entire northern temperate regions of the world. We live on what's called the Atlantic Coastal Plain, which extends through eastern Long Island and the New Jersey Pine Barrens, the Delmarva Peninsula. It's an oak pine forest complex. As you go more into other parts of say southern New England, you get into the eastern deciduous forest. But in all of those circumstances, trees are the critical and most important basic biological component of those ecosystems. So trees are very, very valuable to us in ways beyond our own enjoyment.
And of course, just as you were mentioning, the beauty of them, I mean, who doesn't like to have some gorgeous trees on their property? And a lot of times we see when developers come in, a lot of times they may leave some trees, and a lot of times you can always tell the newer developments have the very
Absolutely.
Young trees. And that's, I think, a tough decision for a lot of people as they think about, well, what kind of tree do I want to put in there? We're going to get into some of that. And what trees, if you're looking, what trees should I save? What trees should I, and how you prune those up, all that kind of stuff. But there are lots of different areas, I guess, that threaten or affect the health of trees, right?
Well, you talked about builders. Mm-hmm. And one of the first things that tends to happen when we build a house is either all the trees are taken down or trees that are left up. The entire lot becomes a parking lot and you get a lot of soil compaction. They trench right alongside trees, cutting, significant sections of the root mass of the tree. And what tends to happen is within a couple of years, many of these trees decline and die. I see this all the time. I'm usually called in 1 or 2 years later after the trees are suffering serious dieback, maybe even complete death. Contractors tend to fill, even landscapers tend to fill trees or they cut the root systems. So at the very beginning, I've tried to encourage this among the builders, but it's a difficult thing, and that is to set up what are called tree protection zones. Decide what trees you would like to keep on your property, which ones would be valuable to you, and then set up protection zones to protect the critical areas of their root zone mm-hmm. so the trees don't decline. I wish more people would do this. Mm-hmm. I've done this for a few clients where I've done this initial consulting work, but typically by the time I get there, the damage is done.
Is part of the reason for clearing out all the trees or most of them is it just makes the job easier? I mean, what is
I
the reason?
I think that's right. It really is. It makes it easier. And, there are certainly some people who prefer less trees in their mm-hmm. property and more lawn. That's not a very ecological approach because mm-hmm. Lawns tend to have a lot of negative impacts on the environment, particularly those that are highly managed with a lot of pesticides and fertilizers. So when you maintain areas that are naturally vegetated or, have trees with understory plantings, those are not only a lot easier to maintain, but they absorb a lot more rainwater. They mitigate a lot more pollutants. They are a lot easier to care for. They have less impacts. And generally, they have more positive benefits to the local environment right around your
they
house.
They create quite a bit of privacy for
privacy,
your
Privacy, shade, cooling, very mm-hmm. important. Mm-hmm. A large tree could be the equivalent of 600 to 700 huge air conditioners running continuously in the summertime.
Oh, that's amazing. Let's talk about some of the natural threats to trees, because we've got one that's raising some concerns in the Worcester area, but we're concerned here as well. We've had this sort of plea to be on the lookout for the Asian longhorn beetle. And in the news
yes.
this week, we've had crews started removing the first of 6,000 infected trees in Worcester, and that's just 5 months after they were discovered there.
Yes, and actually, it wouldn't surprise me at all that by the time they're done, they may be taking down 20,000 trees.
Wow.
Their quarantine covers a 6-town area in Worcester County, northern Worcester County, and it is a serious, serious pest, maybe one of the most serious introduced pests that we've had. Up till now, it was first discovered in New York City, where it did tremendous damage. I mean, tens of thousands of trees were removed from New York. Then it showed up in New Jersey. It actually showed up in Long Island by a method that is the most, let's just say, the most threatening one. If you want to avoid introducing a pest like the Asian longhorn beetle, which is a tree borer, into the Cape, then one thing you should never do is bring firewood from the Worcester area to here. I mean, that is a typical...
And that's what happened in Long Island.
That's what happened in Long Island. Mm-hmm. Somebody who was actually charged to take down trees decided to take some back with him firewood to Long Island. What an idiot. And introduced it there. It also showed up in Chicago. Now, it's interesting. I have friends who work as entomologists. One of them works for APHIS, which is the USDA agency that's charged with preventing these kind of pests from coming here. They're the Animal and Plant Inspection Services of USDA. He was saying just a few months ago that it looked like they had eradicated Asian longhorn beetle from the United States, and principally by taking down so many trees and quarantining areas. And then not more than a month later, it shows up in Worcester.
So is the idea here they have this quarantine area? Are they, would they find like an area and they take everything, where they start with some healthy trees and then inside that whatever that radius is, they take them out?
First of all, they're going to examine trees to find those that are infested. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are treatments for infested trees. The problem is this particular insect, the adult are about an inch and a half long. They're actually brilliant. They're beautifully patterned black and white insects. And there is a native one that looks much like that, almost the same size. It's a minor native cedar borer, but this particular one here has many different hardwood trees it likes to infest. Uh-oh. And the way you can tell it is it has these huge antennas that go along the side of the body that are patterned alternating black and white. Mm-hmm. And it attacks many different hardwood species, maple, elm, birch, horse chestnut, willow. Oak is not on the preferred list, which is a good thing for the Cape, but that doesn't mean they wouldn't move to them if they ran out of something else. Exactly. They create huge tunnels. In fact, the way it was discovered in Worcester, story that I heard, is somebody had found these dime-sized, these 3/8-inch perfectly drilled holes in his tree. He thought his neighbor was trying to kill his tree with a drill.
Wow.
And, I mean, he could push a pencil right into it beautifully, and it turned out they were the exit holes for the Asian longhorn
beetle. Now, where did these things come from?
Well, most of these pests, and by the way, we'll talk about a few others that are on their way, come from, these tend to be wood-boring pests, and the way they come into the United States is in wooden packing crates from China, principally China, but also other parts of Asia, where we get so many imports. They pack them in these wooden crates, and the larvae are living in the wood, and they haven't killed them off. So one of the things that's being discussed is how to... either not allow to change the crates or irradiate them in some way or in some way try to kill anything that might be in the wood before they pack anything in them.
So now, so you should be looking for, as far as keeping an eye out on your own trees, these big dime-sized holes.
They are very obvious. I mean, they're quite huge. Mm-hmm.
We haven't seen anything on the Cape yet.
No, there's no indication that they've been anyplace else in Massachusetts. Like I said, they've been confined. And I think one of the advantages I would say one of the lucky things about the Asian longhorn beetle is they don't move very fast.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good.
They don't go very far very fast. So there's even some people who believe they've probably been in the Worcester area for 10 years.
Yeah, and just
hadn't really been noticed. So the fact that in 10 years they've only moved to maybe within six towns indicates that it's not a fast-moving pest.
Well, that's at least some positive there.
They do so much damage to so many trees.
Right.
And so, like I said, I wouldn't be surprised if 20,000 trees get taken down.
We're talking with Michael Talbot. We're talking about tree health. Our toll-free number, if you have comments or questions, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@wgbh.org. All right, what else as far as pesky little critters like that can we see on the horizon?
Just to give you a contrast to the Asian longhorn beetle, there is another pest that was introduced initially in the Detroit area in Michigan. It is called the emerald ash borer. It's about a half inch long. It's a kind of an iridescent green beetle. It prefers ash trees almost specifically. But it, on the other hand, is a very strong flyer. And this pest has been moving rapidly and will probably get here eventually. It's already gone as far as western Pennsylvania, Maryland, Virginia, West Virginia. It's moved west into Wisconsin. The entire lower peninsula of Michigan is infested, and there is no eradication program that will work for them.
There's nothing we can do for them.
Nothing we can do.
And what
we
do
have
they,
to live
and,
with it.
And what kind of damage do they do?
They do similar damage to ash trees. Mm-hmm. They bore and kill them. In fact, I went to visit Michigan, I think it was about 5 or 6 years ago, maybe a little bit longer, and I walked into a neighborhood because the ash tree is a very common street tree in the upper Midwest. It's very adaptable. It's a relatively nice tree and native. Mm-hmm. And every single tree had been killed within 1 year.
How
1 year.
Wow.
They were gone.
I want to ask you something local here. We had the cicada this last year, and you know, everybody was talking about the damage, the browning and the trees. But they're going to be okay come spring, right?
Well, I think many of the oaks will be okay, but there you could tell in certain areas, like if you traveled up MacArthur Boulevard, there were many of those oaks that had lost 90% of their foliage. You know, it's very possible we are going to lose some trees, or some trees will have been affected by this.
Be a little stressed.
Yeah,
or something.
And then some of the ornamental trees were particularly hit. We found Coosa dogwoods.
Wow.
Where, you know, we had several clients who lost their dogwoods because the damage that the cicada did in laying its eggs really caused the tree too much stress to survive.
So if you have a few little sections, a little branch here or there, your tree will likely be fine. It's when it's really gotten
you'll have to watch.
Yeah.
I mean, with any of these kind of pests, you know, the best thing to do is see what happens in the spring and see how they've recovered.
And I guess don't be so quick to judge. I have a thought. You know, this was a couple years ago. We had a snowstorm, and the plow just plowed right over my inkberry bush. And just right, and my husband said, that thing's dead. Let's just rip it up. I said, no, let's wait and see. And it actually did come back.
Sure.
It's not as big, but it's, you know, slowly
getting
there.
Well, what's nice about those kind of plants is they do sucker from the base.
Yeah.
Many of those shrubs. But yeah, I was actually surprised at some of the ornamentals, you know, the Japanese maples and things. Yeah. There was a lot of injury, but the trees seemed to survive it better.
So we'll just watch it. All right. Lisa's giving us a call from Oak Bluffs. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. I have a question. This isn't really about pests, but
that's okay.
I have a property that we bought about 4 years ago in town, so it's a very tiny lot. And it had been rehabbed by the previous owners, and what they did was they basically buried all these beautiful maple trees. You know, I know all about how that's terrible. You know, it's like looks like a foot and a half. So by the time I got here, it's just kind of a root mass with, like, popsicle sticks sticking up. And they're really great shade trees in the summer, and I've been advised by smart people that pretty much the only thing you can do is cut them down. So I don't know I really don't want to have to do
Lisa,
that.
Lisa, let me ask you a question. Do you know if they are, what type of maples they are?
Well, all I know is that they have yellow leaves, so I'm assuming that's like a yellow, but I don't know.
You mean they turn yellow in the fall?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're probably Norway maples.
Okay.
But it would probably be worth having an arborist come in and take a look at that. Of course, if it's Norway maples, you may want to take a few of them down anyway. They happen to be very highly invasive trees.
Oh, really?
But the good news about many of the maples is they're a little more tolerant of filling than say, oak trees are.
Oh, good.
You know, in general. And the native red maple maybe the most. So it's possible the trees could survive. And I think trees like that, particularly that have very aggressive, shallow root systems, will tend to repopulate those areas. I would suggest, you know, trying to at least expose some of the trunk itself.
Well, I tried
and unbury it.
One of my neighbors had recommended that, and I couldn't forget a trowel. You know, even with a shovel, I could not. I mean,
oh yes,
the root mass is so.
Yeah, that's another reason I suspect it might be a Norway maple. They have incredible. I have a picture of a colleague of mine. We were planting underneath a Norway maple, and he took out this mass of roots. You could have used it as a you know, wheel block. It was so dense.
All right, so that's why they survive well, because they do that.
Yes, they do that. So it's possible. Now you have to monitor them if you decide to keep them, because if you start to see die back, or if you start to see bark sloughing or things that might indicate cankers or other, because that's what will tend to happen is the tree will be infected by some secondary disease organisms like cankers and root rots, and those will cause, you know, the tree to decline and eventually die. So that's what you have to monitor at this
point. Okay, because they're very close to our house. I mean, we can't.
You really should have that, too. You know, in the springtime.
Yeah.
Have a good arborist. Somebody who really knows their stuff, come out and take a look
at it.
Spring is the best time?
Spring.
Spring, because then, you know, we can dig around. We can see how the trees look after they're leafed out, because this is a real indicator of how well they're surviving this this terrible injury.
Lisa, thank you for the phone call and the question. We appreciate that.
Well, thanks for the advice.
Sure.
You're
welcome. Let's talk to Bob, who's calling from Martha's Vineyard. Hi, Bob.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I live on Chappaquiddick, and I've got kind of a bizarre issue. The native oak trees, the pin oaks or the shrub oaks, seem to shed these small droplets of sap onto my vehicles. Now,
that's probably more insect than actually sap.
Well, it seems to be, if it sits under the tree, I mean, I watch it, it's right outside my shop where I work all day, and it seems to collect these, and then the flies and the bees are just extremely attracted to it. And I'll have literally dozens of them on the vehicle, and they leave behind these remnants. I'm not sure if it's from defecation or what, but if left on for a couple of weeks, it will actually start to eat through the clear coat on the vehicle.
Wow.
Well, typically when you have that kind of sticky substance coming off of a tree onto a vehicle underneath, it's some kind of a sucking pest of the tree. Aphids, you know, delgid, they're scale insects, or a variety of things. And what it is they suck on the juices of the tree and they excrete a sugary substance. And that sugary substance is what's, you know, landing on your car and attracting bees.
Okay,
so that's probably what it is.
It seems the impact, they don't, for whatever reason, the flies and bees are not attracted to the other vehicles, only the white vehicle. They have a blue Toyota sitting right next to
it,
and they don't bother that one at all. These insects that are excreting it, is there... these same trees, I just happened to notice this last year, were starting to lose large clumps of leaves, whole branches were dying off.
Hmm.
And when I looked at the leaves, it looked like, when I tried to look it up online, it looked like it was, I'm trying to remember now, not mold.
Sooty mold?
Well, it looked like it was a more along that line than an insect type thing. But
you mean like was it black? Kind of a dense black coating that you were seeing on them, or?
Yeah, I guess so. It slowly seemed to affect the underside of the leaves, and it would kill them off, and they'd curl up and then prematurely drop.
Well, this sounds like, again, something you should really have a good arborist take a look at, one that has a good background in forensics and being able to discover what's really going on here, observing what's happening, diagnosing it. Because before you think about, you know, whether to keep the trees or whether, you know, to treat them in some way, the first step has to be diagnosing what is the issue and then determining how severe it is.
Bob, you don't happen to have the name of a...
Well, you know, Bob, I'm going to ask him that question for you, but Bob, we're going to let you go. Thanks for the phone call.
You said
this a couple times, good arborist. What are we looking for when you say good arborist? What are the things we need to look for?
Well, that's a good question. Sometimes the best thing is to have a couple of them come out and take a look at your issue, and you may have to make a decision based on the discussion they're having with you whether they seem to really be able to diagnose what your issues are. Because more often than not, the problem with plants is not a specific pest, but it's something cultural that has been done, and sometimes those issues get ignored.
So you should be asking your arborist then questions like what their background, their training, that sort of stuff?
You can ask that. I mean, I think, you know, if you start by calling up, you know, a couple of the tree companies in your area, you know, it's a service that we offer. We do plant health care. So obviously I train my people to try to diagnose pest problems. And a lot of the other tree companies, you know, there'll be varying degrees of expertise on their staff.
And I guess ask your neighbors. If you have a neighbor who seems to be having somebody that's doing a good job, maybe word of mouth is always good. And there's also, let's not forget, Cooperative Extension Services also have some folks there that you can chat with.
Absolutely.
All right. Chelsea's calling from Woods Hole. Hi, Chelsea.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I lost a moderately old apple tree in the snowstorm this year, and I'm wondering about replacing it. when I was in Oregon, I fell in love with something called a northern spy, and I wondered if that would be appropriate for this area.
When you say you lost it, what happened? You said the snowstorm. Did it, the branches just come down, or what happened?
No, the whole tree.
The whole tree came down. Wow, mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep.
Well, you know, apples are one of the higher maintenance of the fruit trees, and certainly northern spy is a nice variety. It produces a nice apple. You do need to have a pollinator in order for that to get good fruit production. And then, of course, the production of fruit, you know, involves the fact that apples have a large number of pests that attack the fruit.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it would be good to have a, you know, get a good management guide on ecological fruit production in the north, just to be aware of what to look out for. But just remember that, you know, you want to have a site that is well-drained, that is, you know, a good loam is what they would prefer to grow in, and to make sure that they have good sun during much of the day. You can get trees from a variety of nursery sources, both bare root in the spring, and that those will tend to give you a lot more selections, too.
Are there disease-resistant varieties
there
that would
are.
Be better for the cane?
There are disease-resistant varieties, and there's new ones being developed all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not working as much with fruit trees as I was, say, a decade ago when I was doing a lot of work in the Metro Boston area. But they're not always the best quality fruit. But they are resistant, and one of the things to keep in mind that here on the Cape, because of our wet, mm-hmm. cool springs, we have severe problems with apple scab and cedar apple rust,
right.
Because we also
yeah.
have the alternate host, which is the red cedar. So, you know, when you pick a tree, be aware of the fact that if it's a tree that's very susceptible to those, you're going to have to do a lot of spraying to control them. So it's better to try to pick trees that are either resistant to them or...
Yeah, Chelsea, I wish I could tell. I have two apple trees. I don't know what kind they are, but all I put on them is that, you know, that oil in the spring.
The dormant oil.
And that's all I do. And they aren't pretty apples, I'll tell you that. They have, like, you know, spots on the outside,
mm-hmm.
but I peel them. The inside of the apple's perfect. The outsides look horrible, but the insides are perfect, and, you know, so you can make things with them, but they're not the best eating apples.
Yeah, a lot of times I have friends that do organic apple production in Maine, and much of their apples go into the cider mill.
Yeah.
That's
mm-hmm.
just the nature of it. But on the other hand, you know, you can cut them up. You can use them in fruit sauces,
sure.
make jams with them.
Lots of things.
There's lots of things
yeah.
you can do with them.
Chelsea, good question. Thanks for that this morning. Appreciate
okay.
your call. Good luck.
Will any of the trees be resistant to the Christmas moths?
You're talking about the winter moths. Yeah.
Winter moths.
No, no, as a matter of fact, that's a generalist pest that happens to really like apples.
Yeah.
Likes cherries even more, but it likes apples. And so, you know, that is one of the things you'll have to be aware of. On the other hand, that's a relatively easy pest to manage. A good dormant oil application mm-hmm. in the spring, maybe followed up with an application of, if you catch them early enough, you can use something called BT, mm-hmm. which works very well. But you got to get them when they're extremely young, and they do emerge very early. They
yeah.
even emerge before the leaves actually come out.
Yeah. Chelsea, thanks for that phone call. I want to ask you about, we talked a little bit about some, what are some of the native trees that when you're thinking about choosing, maybe you can give us some, what should we be looking for, and what are some of the things we should be avoiding?
Well, first of all, let's start with, anytime you're thinking about planting trees, this is a very critical element of sustainable design or ecological design, and that is first assess your site. You know, what are the conditions that you have there? You know, was there a lot of nice soil brought in at one time, or are you dealing with sort of the native, really very sandy, very infertile soils that are typical, not so much here in Woods Hole along Buzzards Bay, but as you go east into
right.
the sandbar part of the Cape,
mm-hmm.
The soils get very poor. They tend to be very dry, very droughty. So if you look at what grows native-wise, you see the oaks do well. They're very adapted, black cherries. These are trees, sassafras, that do well here because they are, you know, they can grow in these kind of conditions. So you want to look for trees that have similar kind of characteristics, trees that have good drought tolerance. If it's a shady area, make sure it's a tree that's adapted to shade. So in other words, you're not just looking at color and form and texture. You're looking at suitability, adaptability, low maintenance characteristics as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an immense number of trees, both native and some good non-natives to use. Trees, obviously, to avoid that are those that have kind of invasive characteristics, the Norway maple being one of the worst.
And bamboo, I see a lot of bamboo. That's and you hear you shouldn't go with the bamboo, is that
yeah,
right?
Yeah, well, there are actually two types of bamboos. There are those that are clumpers and then those that are spreaders. And some of the spreaders, like the yellow groove bamboo, which is commonly seen here on the Cape, was planted by a number of people some decades ago, really can spread rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
You can control it by putting a very strong root barrier in, or you can control it by placing it somewhere where you can either mow around it or you have, large areas of hardscape that will prevent it from moving beyond its point. But it's a nice plant in some ways, but it's
pretty,
definitely invasive.
Yeah, right, but
you got
your work cut out for you if you don't handle it properly, I guess.
And there are clumping type of bamboos that are attractive. Now, of course, the nice thing about the creeping one, the spreading one, is yellow groove bamboo is edible.
So when they
get really big, you can
eat
get bamboo shoots. Exactly. They're quite delicious.
Right. Now, I know we heard about winter moth. We have all these sort of caterpillar things that are going to be coming in the spring. It seems like we add more and more to the list every year.
Well, the winter moth is the principal one because at this point there are no natural controls. What happened with the gypsy moth, which is another terrible invasive caterpillar that was introduced, actually it was brought in on purpose to Medford, Massachusetts, as a matter of fact, over a century and a half ago, is that all of a sudden what showed up finally in the early 80s was a both a virus and a fungal pathogen that now on years when there's wet springs keeps it in check. If we have dry springs, then you'll see the gypsy moth population start to grow and grow again. Right now, the winter moth has no such controls. So it is still a serious pest. It's still spreading. They are introducing some natural control organisms into the environment, but it's going to take a while for those to, spread throughout the region and manage this pest.
Right. In the 30 seconds or so that we have left, the snow and ice that's falling on trees, not much you can do about that, right?
Not really. I mean, trees are adapted to that. If you've got some special trees and they're really bent over and you want to remove the snow, just remember, be really careful. Use a broom and just sort of tap it to knock the snow off.
Get out there while it's snowing before it gets to that icy mix.
that could be a little challenging. Because I think what tends to happen is if you get too aggressive, you'll actually break more branches than
the
snow will.
Yeah. All right. Michael Talbot, certified arborist, horticulturist. He's a conservation consultant and landscape designer with Talbot Ecological Land Care. Always so much more we have to talk about. We have to get you back here
again. All right, Mindy. It was great
to
be
much.
Here again.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is hosted and produced by Mindy Todd. The executive producer is Steve Young. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH Radio.